kind, gentle creatures that can only hurt one another by accident. He says, then there are wolves. The wolves will feed on the sheep. They're the sociopaths. They're the criminals. He says, and then there are sheepdogs. The sheep are a little leery of the sheepdog. He wanders around and checks the perimeter every night and barks at the moon. He would never turn his teeth on the flock, but he yearns for a righteous battle. When the wolf comes around, nothing else will do, and the entire flock is sitting there trying to hide behind one lonely sheepdog as he faces down the wolves. We're talking about a creature who is capable of confronting and dealing with combat and sustaining themselves across the long haul. The goal becomes to be a sheepdog, to be a warrior, to be the one that is ready to respond to the threats when the time arises.
Hey guys, welcome to Blue Justice. This is Amanda. I am on the road. We have Ken and David Shawless on the line. Guys, I'm going to let you guys kind of run with it. I'll be here to listen, but I'm on the road. So, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Amanda. Hi, David.
Hi, Ken. How you doing?
Okay, so far. You want to kick it off? What do you have on your mind?
There's a topic that I wanted to bring up, or a story here. I don't know if you're aware of it, Ken. I'm sure you probably are. The San Francisco PD, how they're revamping their use of force policies. They just instituted a whole revamp of how they interact with the use of deadly force because of the shooting, the officer-involved shooting a little bit ago in Bayview neighborhood with that Mario Woods.
Mario Woods, yes.
Yeah,
young fella.
He was a knife-wielding individual, and they shot him. Now they've got the mayor asked for a deep investigation outside of the department, and also involve the community, the black community. Now they've got what they call an African-American advisory forum that will oversee all officer-involved shootings, which I don't agree with. If they want to be part of the process as far as listening, you know, but I think letting the community police the police, I mean, I think we're getting out of hand here.
Yes, I'm familiar with the Mario Woods shooting and all that other business. San Francisco has been grappling with that baloney for quite some time. As a matter of fact, when I was just coming up and was wanting to be a cop, that would be the last place I'd want to be a police officer. If you did anything to anger those folks, you know, your ass is grass. That's a real tough town to be a cop in, and I'm familiar with that. I've kind of been following that on the flat screen there, and I noticed that the chief has made a proposal for smart guns or less lethal guns or something. I don't know, maybe they shoot love beads at somebody or something, but I just glanced at that the other day, and every time you take a look at that San Francisco stuff, it's almost like Ferguson and Michael Brown Jr., where
they erected a plaque.
Now they're going to make this guy who was a terrible career criminal a big frickin' hero. And, you know, it gets to the point where it gets disgusting at some point. And I just wonder when somebody's going to wake up and come to their senses on that. And I certainly agree with you, David, that there should be input from all aspects because everybody falls under the purview of the police. But, my God, to have the – and, you know, it's a Black Lives Matter group or one of their offshoots or somebody that's patterned their stuff after that. And if it was up to them, there would be no policing, and it would be, you know, things would just run wild. I really don't get it, but...
Well, they basically here, they're tying the hands of their law enforcement community here. The officers can't do their jobs efficiently. I mean, if you've got a knife-wielding suspect in front of you, and just like in this particular case, they deployed beanbag rounds at him several times, and it did not stop him. I mean, all it did was maybe disorient him for a second, but he kept on with his attack. It did not in any way stop the aggression. So their last, you know, recourse was to put him down. Now they're...
Well, he was attacking the officers at that time, wasn't he?
Correct. Correct.
They're coming at him.
And he did not comply with numerous orders to put the weapon down, continued on with his attack, making advances. And, you know, after deploying beanbag rounds at him, and had no effect, subsequently had no effect, really. And last recourse was lethal force, and that's what they used. And they were fully justified in what they did because they explored all other means. But here what the department wants to do now is if the knife-wielding suspect that you encounter is not a threat to anybody else, only to himself, you're not to deploy lethal force. Now, how do you determine they're not a threat to the community at large? They're obviously in attack mode. What are you going to sit there and try and psychoanalyze them in 10 seconds?
That's what folks would have you realize. An old street corner philosophy told me one time, man, that don't make no sense. You know, what if this guy would have, let's say the cops just let him go and he walks down the street and here's some guy out walking his dog or something. He walks up to him and slits his throat. Well, who the hell's going to be liable for that? The police officer in the city. You have police to maintain law and order and to keep nutballs like this. And I would submit to you, David, that if he was being hit by these beanbags and all that business and was not going down, then he had to be whacked out on PCP or something.
Oh, yeah, to be on.
Totally. Those guys, it takes, you know, I've seen a little skinny kid with all messed up on PCP throwing cops around like, you know, big burly cops around like nothing, and they're slimy. They're like fish, and they have superhuman strength. They're impervious to baton strikes or anything else. San Francisco doesn't have tasers, do they?
They are now being issued them. Apparently they did not have that resource. That's why they were using beanbag deployments, which, I mean, in some regards are sometimes just as effective. But, you know, hey, let's face it. If you got a guy, you know, wired out and his adrenaline's flowing, even on PCP, LSD, and all that other crap, you know, and he's flying high, he's not – sometimes tasers don't even work. Let's face it.
That's true. They don't work. They work about 99% of the time, and that 1%, you're in for a hell of a fight.
Oh,
you know, I don't think the police – if you sit down and look at this logically – and I know we're talking about San Francisco, but if you look at this logically, my God, they had run out of options real quick and early on. And, you know, there was nothing left to do. And I know the hue and the cry is going to go, oh, this poor guy, and the ACLU is going to get involved in all of these pressure groups. And, you know, I just hate to see that happen, these poor guys. And some poor patrolman someplace, you know, a couple of guys riding the beat, and they're gonna bump into some of these guys in San Francisco and all those knuckleheads just getting out of San Quentin, and the bus drops them off in either Oakland or San Francisco, and they go cash their gate money and go get wired up or looking for something to a store to knock off or something. And
I know the FOP is not very happy with the policies in play here out there, And, I mean, all, subsequently they're putting the patrol officer or any officer for that matter and the community at large at some in some serious risk here by tying their hands the way they are. And like you said, would you know, if you had a choice of police departments to go to, that would not be one of them, that's for sure, because those guys, I'll tell you what, that's you'd have to be one dedicated law officer to step up into the ranks of San Francisco.
Oh, my God. And you know, there's young, idealistic men and women applying for those jobs. And, you know, there's been a lot of, not a lot, but a certain amount of clutter about police officer applications and stuff. Police officer applications are down. Well, I was talking to a deputy chief in St. Louis the other day, and he said, Jesus Christ, they get more applications than they've ever had. So, you know, there's people willing to step up and step up to the plate and take on the task. But, boy, if they only knew from the experiences that you and I have had.
I mean, basically, the SFPD or by the brass, you know, instituting some of these policies, I think they're opening Pandora's box, to be honest with you.
It seems like it's a, you know, a quick stopgap kind of a thing, but I hope it doesn't go anywhere. You know, you got to draw a line someplace, and either that chief or that mayor, and I don't know if that they have the grapes to do that, has to draw a line and says, hey, look.
Well, they obviously don't, because they're letting this community action program take the lead on this, and the minute you do that you've really tied your hands, because now you've given them the reins to say and do whatever, you know, they want to be done. And the police have no authority anymore. You're stripping them of it.
Oh, and you know, some of the older guys are going to say, oh, boy, that's it for me. I'm not doing nothing.
Exactly. It's going to be the
end.
We'll let them kill each other, and then we'll just go in with a body bag and make a report.
Yeah, make a report. Do a neighborhood canvas. Nobody saw anything? Did anybody see anything? Raise your hand, please. Well, nobody saw anything. Okay, boom. That way a homicide turns out to be about a one-pager. And I'll tell you, other departments throughout the country are going to look at this and see what San Francisco does or doesn't do. And boom, shakalaka. You know, there's been a lot of movement towards use of force. And a couple of things I want to talk about, if we can, and it goes kind of along that way, David, if you could bear with me here just for a second. And I follow this Police One, where I'm a member, and it's really got some good stuff. And one that was just the other day says, police officials quarrel over when to use force. Groups representing chiefs and rank-and-file sworn officers are pushing back against a proposal last week by PERF. That's a police executive research forum. That used to be police, you know, retired chiefs and stuff like that. I think now it's a bunch of eggheads, you know, PhDs and this and that, who have spent no time or minimal time on the street. This group PERF wants to set higher standards for using violence than what is minimally required under current law. Under the recommendations that PERF makes, officers would go beyond the Supreme Court adopted basic legal standard that asks what a reasonable officer would do in such situation, encourages officers to focus on preserving all lives, not just their own. Now, let me ask you this. What kind of barfola is that?
That's a bunch of horseshit.
In these shooting situations, I've been involved in four shooting instances, you didn't have time to blink. You had to act or you were dead. And these things, you know, King's X, here, let me think about this. Now, if I shoot you, what kind of, let me see. Okay, we can go back to what we were doing, and you can continue MFing me and all this other business. These people are living in a dream world, and all of this crapola started with Michael Brown Jr. and Ferguson, Missouri, when the politicians got involved and it got just all bollocksed up. Let me continue on here. The International Association of Chiefs of Police and the Fraternal Order of Police say they have problems with the proposal. Well, good for them. So this time you got the FOP, which is generally the rank and file, and the International Associations of Chiefs are both saying that they have a good bit of trouble with this PERF recommendation. The police chief group said setting different policies and standards would lead to confusion and hesitation by police endangering officers and the public. Well, yeah, you know, if you tell these cops, well, you know, be careful about that and don't do this and don't do that. And we're already seeing this deadly hesitation already is starting to creep into police work, and I'm deathly afraid that it's going to become ingrained in this generation of police officers and the generations following them. And just in the last week, there was at least one police officer killed, and you can't open up the police websites that you and I both follow without seeing another. I just got off the flat screen before I tuned in here. You almost get, you know, absorbed in that Facebook stuff. And I saw that another deputy in South Carolina got shot just, you know, last night.
Yeah.
And the only reason it was a female officer, and the only reason this lady wasn't killed was because she was wearing her vest. Wear your vest and wear your seat belts, everybody. Those things are going to save you. And we don't get it. And this kind of baloney that they're putting out in San Francisco is just making things worse.
Oh, yeah.
Continuing here.
Cisco and your politicians, you know, still within Ferguson and some of these hotter areas, they're allowing the politicians to take the reins here. And first off, they have no law enforcement experience whatsoever. And even when these chiefs are trying to explain to them, you know, what was really happening here, they refuse to listen. They think their ideas of policing is all about, you know, let's just take them to lunch. He'll be okay. You know, that's the attitude to have. I mean, these people, you know, that are going out and committing these heinous crimes, you know, have to be dealt with, let's face it, by our uniformed professionals that are trained to deal with this. You know, if you're a desk jockey sitting in the mayor's office and you don't know the first thing about law enforcement, who are you to say how they do their policing? you had no formal training. You don't know what they come up against. Do you do ride-alongs on a daily basis to see what they face? Probably not, because you're probably afraid to even get in one of those cars.
Well, you're damn sure afraid to get in and go to some of the dark places where cops go and, you know, and deal with the things that they deal with. Yeah, absolutely correct. And that's going to be the death of police departments, I'm afraid. And Amanda had last week, she said that last year there was one cop killed by gunfire in the same time period that we were talking about. And then this year it's been like 8 or 9, and I was looking at that police officer memorial page, and gunfire deaths for this year are up 1,000%. Think of that, 1,000%.
If the community heads around that,
ooh,
realizing there's something seriously wrong here, you've got your head so far up your ass, you don't even know what life's dealing you.
Wow, how about it? That's just unfathomable. I don't understand it. And all of these things are coming into play thanks to Ferguson. That, you know, hesitation. You give them a hug and things will be fine. But things aren't going to be fine, you dumbasses. And it's going to take, I'm afraid, a rash of police officer deaths and you know, maybe the deaths of a couple politicians. Some of these goofballs running into a liberal city council meeting in San Francisco there and shooting up the place and just missing a couple of these guys. It's going to have to wake them up. But
well, it takes a tragedy to open the eyes. And, you know, if you're going to put yourself in that position, I guess, you know, be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
Be careful. Be careful indeed. Be very careful because something wicked is coming your way.
People don't realize, you know, the criminals don't play by the rules. They don't have a rule book. We do. We have laws in place. We have a rule book, things we have to follow, okay? And we afford every criminal every opportunity to straighten the hell up. When you refuse to listen, well, then, you know, so be it. You know, you pay with, you know, whatever price you have to pay, you know, given the circumstances, you know. And I told Amanda, you know, a while back here, when you allow people to make these changes with your police departments and this and the other, and you're in agreement with them, well, if you're going to tie the hands of the police department, then you better be prepared to shake hands with the criminal and make them your friend.
Yeah, good luck on that one. Let me know how that pans out for you, will you?
Yeah, exactly.
That's silly.
I'm not going to shake no damn criminal's hand. If anything, I'm going to pop him in the head.
Well, the only time I want to see their hands when you hear the ratchets click on the cuffs.
Yeah, that's sound.
Yep, there we go. Hey, listen, talking about the left coast there, did you see in Seattle the other day where some coppers, they were doing a drug saturation patrolling or something in a neighborhood where the neighbors, not the hood rats, were complaining about, you know, excessive drug trafficking and, you know, shootings and muggings and this type of thing, carjackings. And the coppers were watching this one guy. His name was Chi Taylor, like Chi Guevara was his first name. And he's a 48-year-old career criminal, just got out of the joint about 2 months ago. And the cops, he was a guy that they've been kind of keeping an eye on, and they saw him and they thought he was dirty, and they had him in a car and they had him in the passenger side, and they had him they drew down on him and were giving him commands, and he refused to follow their commands. He went for a gun and they lit him up, and he had a large quantity of tar heroin, a large quantity of crack cocaine, a large quantity of powder cocaine. Plus, he was a career criminal. You know what? You know what's happening, don't you? Let me.
Oh, I can just imagine.
Take a guess on that one. Well, the Black Lives Matter crew is saying that he didn't have time to react, and the police acted too quickly, and this and that. And you know, the politicians up there, they're letting the tail wag the dog here. And we're going to take a good hard look at this and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and of course they release the names of the coppers that were involved in the shooting. I don't agree with that, man. I don't get it. And,
another thing now, which is a good piece of information out there for supporters, that last ruling that a judge ruled that it's not your constitutional right to film the police when they're on, you know, in the performance of their duties, where people thought it was their freedoms to do that. It's not. You don't
How
have
about it.
It is not protected by the U.S. Constitution.
Yes, that's correct. I saw that, and that was in a district. Was that a U.S. district court? Is that where
that was?
That
was a U.S. district court that did against it. Because they were saying that, you know, it was under their freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and that's not the case.
Well, as it shouldn't be. The police officer is conducting an investigation, or he's confronting a pedestrian stop, vehicle stop, whatever. You know, he's got to concentrate on the issue at hand. He doesn't have time or the wherewithal to be trying to see what
well,
this person
at that point, you know, you're involving yourself in something, and that's called obstruction of justice.
Well, damn sure is, and it needs to be enforced. I was glad to see that, and I hope that thing winds its way up to the Supreme Court in pretty short time, so that
sure.
we can start getting some guidelines on this thing, put it in, because that's going to be something that's going to be an issue at some point, where a copper locks somebody up and it goes to trial and blah, 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 and it goes through the appeal process. But, you know, police officers need their space when they're dealing with a traffic stop, a pedestrian interaction, or investigating, you know, a weapon offense, or you know, whatever the case may be. A cop's got to have room to operate and to thoroughly conduct that investigation. Not have somebody coming up, hollering and screaming and flapping that phone thing right in his face. We shouldn't have to put up with that kind of crap. And I'm glad.
Ultimately,
yeah.
happening is there's going to be a grave situation where an officer has to possibly take a life. And somebody's sitting there videoing this whole aspect of it. And when it gets to trial, and the defense attorney, let's say, you know, they want to prosecute the police officer, and they sit there and they want to bring the footage in and saying that he acted inappropriately, or if the suspect is still alive and they try and use it in his defense, what subsequently is going to happen is anybody in their right mind, a judge is not going to allow it under what this current ruling is, but eventually it's, like you said, it's going to reach a higher court because people are going to object to it being made admissible evidence because the officer was not given the opportunity to say, yes, you can film this, no, you can't. They're going to ask him in cross, you know, were you asked if you could be videoed during this altercation? Well, obviously the officer's going to say no.
Well, sure. What?
I mean,
yeah.
Who on the line's going to say it's okay to video this kind of altercation? First off, you don't even know what's going on. You're standing on a street corner and you're videoing this, and you know you take it from one angle, so you're only seeing one side of it. You're not seeing all angles. You're not seeing the entire thing, and that's the purpose. You know, video is a great thing, but it also, you know, if you see it from all points of view, from the officer's point of view, public's point of view. I mean, there's many facets of this. And to focus in on one person's video and say, you did wrong, no. I don't agree.
That's why I think these body cameras that are becoming more and more in play, I guess, you know, I'm thinking those things are going to, they're going to make a big difference for a short period of time. But you can always, well, I can't, but, you know, some of these pressure groups can always find fault with something a police officer does. And anybody
nope.
with any, with a lick of common sense knows that they're full of baloney. But you know, who gets all the press? It's those guys. You know, they're the ones that get all the nightly news and stuff, not the copper that killed a guy who was going to go into this house and knock off seven people or something like that. And every one of these knuckleheads that gets knocked by a copper, they're a bunch of career criminals and hood rats. They're not productive citizens. They're not somebody that's making a contribution to society or holding down a steady job or anything like that. They're all just a bunch of scumbums. So I can't understand all the angst about this. You know, maybe that's why I don't watch CNN and NBC and ABC and all those. So.
I mean, that's another thing that I wanted to bring up, too, is the fact that, you know, you've got the Hollywood aspect, you know, stepping in here now and portraying, you know, the police as the bad guys. Take a recent episode of that show called Black-ish, where they condemned police from beginning to end. I mean, it was appalling. Viewing the show actually would nauseate you. It was sickening to watch.
Did you watch it, or did you hear about it, or what?
I heard about it, so I made a point, because I normally don't watch that program, but I tuned in that night, and the portrayal, and they used real names of cases out there that have happened and are still under investigation. I mean, they portrayed the police as basically Gestapo.
Hmm. Well, I didn't watch that show, and you know, shame on me. I haven't seen Hateful Eight either by who's that asshole Tarantino?
Yeah.
I'll wait till it comes out on 8-track.
A worthless piece of shit.
Amen. So I'll tell you what, I think he might have slit his own throat when he came out against those New York coppers and called the murderers, or whatever the hell he said. I don't know. That guy doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. I think he got some bad LSD back in the 70s. But he really did a number on himself, and he did it to himself. He shot himself in the foot. So,
oh yeah,
you know
in Hollywood, they don't realize, you know, you're reaching, you know, a worldwide audience, because a lot of these programs are aired even overseas, and you know, and portraying us in a certain light. You know, you've got millions upon millions of people, possible viewers. And to paint law enforcement in such a ridiculous color, I mean, without, you know, there's nothing about being fair about anything, point, counterpoint, nothing. It's always one-sided just because of ratings. You know,
hey,
I'm sorry. You've got people that are sitting there that are so susceptible to the slightest thing that's said, and, I mean, they don't realize what they're listening to, and they just adopt it as gospel. They think it's real life. You know, and they've got their priorities mixed up here. I mean, they're hurting American law enforcement as a whole, period.
I'm sure they are. You mentioned the ratings. Have you researched that at all?
No, I didn't get a chance to research it. But I will tell you this. I know they have a very large viewing audience. That particular same night that episode aired, there was a counter episode on another television program that painted the police in such a positive manner that showed what they actually do. I mean, it was so close to real life that you couldn't ask for anything better, and that was Chicago PD.
I've heard a lot about it, haven't seen it yet.
Made a reference, and there was a lot of reference to BLM in that episode.
There
was a lot of reference to it, and the pastor that was involved, I guess, in the investigation was also about Black Lives Matter. And the sergeant in charge of their crimes unit, special crimes unit, really told them, we're not the enemy. We're here to help you and help this community. He says, I've served this community for over 25 years. He says, I've helped you and everybody else. What makes you think that nobody's life matters? Everybody's life matters. They painted such a positive picture, and it was actually so true to life that I was impressed to see that a Hollywood producer produced something in such a positive manner that showed both aspects of what people were thinking, but spun it off in a positive way. I mean, I applaud them. They did a great job. And I'm glad it aired right after this Blackish episode, so that there was a positive spin to hopefully diminish anybody who watched this program and thought just one way.
Outstanding. David, could you message me after this? I want to do some research on this, and we'll talk about it next week.
Sure.
I want to get the ratings of those and get the channels that they're on and that kind of thing. Just do some basic research, and we can discuss it next week. Because that would be interesting that'd be very interesting to see, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's
okay, guys, we have like 20 minutes left. And we were sitting here thinking that we wanted to hear some positive stuff today. Let's do some, do you guys have any like funny law enforcement stories or anything funny to cover? Any, you guys have any good stories, positive stories to tell from personal experience?
Okay. me and my partner stopped a guy one night, and we walk up to the car, and the guy goes, man, what you stop me for? And my partner says, you have a non-illuminated license plate. And well, he gets out of his this pink Cadillac with Fat Freddy's and all the stuff, and he walks back, and he looks at the license plate, man, that don't illuminate till next month. okay, I got another little story if you want.
Go ahead. Sorry, I'm muted. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, when I was a homicide detective in St. Louis County, Missouri, let me back up. I was a narcotics detective in St. Louis County on a drug task force, and we had caught a guy with a whole bunch of marijuana and a couple of kilos of coke, and he was from East St. Louis, and his name was Eddie Bo Smith, and so we booked him, and then he made we didn't have warrants at the time, so we got him indicted federally, and he was from East St. Louis, Illinois, and we walked into the East St. Louis police station and identified ourselves and asked for a detective. We talked to Detective Sergeant Lester Anderson, and he nabbed this guy for us. We went over and got him, and he got like 15 years or something. And fast forward about 20 years, and I was administrator for the statewide metropolitan enforcement groups and narcotic task forces for the state of Illinois, working for the Illinois Criminal Justice Authority, where I kind of was the administrator for 23 statewide units. And one was down in Collinsville, which is close to East St. Louis, and I was visiting that unit one time, and I says, "Do you guys ever have anything to do with Lester Anderson in East St. Louis?" And they started laughing, and they said, "Yeah, Lester is the chief of detectives there now." I said, "Really?" And he says, "Yeah, Lester's a nice guy, but you know he wasn't too sharp he wasn't the sharpest knife in the box there." And so they started laughing, and when Lester became the chief of detectives, he called a press conference, and all the St. Louis media was there, you know, and all the microphones were there, and he gets this real stern look on his face, and he says, "I got two words for the criminals in East St. Louis. Beware." Hey, drunk, you know. I mean, that's what keeps the job going. It's so damn, there's some humor to police work. And if you don't maintain your sense of humor, my God, you're a goner. But there's a lot of funny police stories. Let's see. Okay, I got one for you. There was a guy that we had, and it was in it's one of the districts. I forget where it was, and the lieutenant in charge of the district detectives was some pansy who was afraid of his own shadow. We had this tough-ass drug dealer. I think the guy's name was Ronnie Blade. And we drug him into the lieutenant's office and threw him in a chair. And the guy's pissing and moaning and, you blah, 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 you can't do this. Yeah, we just did. And the lieutenant was in a hurry to get out of there. And he was such a big hurry to get out of there that his Beretta fell out of his holster. God knows that thing hadn't been never saw any use. And it winds up on the floor, and it winds over by this guy's chair, the bad guy, and it's on the floor, and it's spinning around. And he kind of folds his arm, clicks his teeth, you know. down at that pistol and goes, oh, no, I ain't falling for that shit.
Well, I can remember one. This didn't involve me, but it involved my father. And at that time, he was a police commander. He didn't make chief, but he was chasing. They had got a call. They were going after a suspect that had just robbed a Sears and Roebuck. And two younger officers that were, I'll give you a background here. They're avid runners, and I mean they're sprinters. These guys. And my father was not built for running. He was one of those people that don't make me run. If I catch you, it's going to be worse kind of deal. And this suspect starts running through this open ball, towards an open ball field. Well, my father and these officers know exactly where they're going because that's where they always ran through and would always shake the police. So my father got a little pissed off that he was running towards that way, but these other two officers that, like I said, are avid runners, they're going tooth and I mean, they're charging. What my father did was he flagged down a yellow cab, and he bumped into it, and he told him, hurry up. I mean, he told this cabbie he could break any traffic law he needed to get him on the opposite side of that field. And he got over there, and the perp match, or the suspect's coming running towards him, doesn't even know who my father is. He's sitting there on the bleachers waiting for the kid to get closer, and then he just clotheslined the kid. While he's got the kid in cuffs, these other two officers finally come. They're up there panting. How the hell did you get over here, Ronnie? We left you way back where. You don't run. He says, I'll never tell. He says, I'm good.
Amen. He was good to pull that one.
I mean, we told that. That story has been told so many times throughout the agency. It's just unbelievable. It was like, now that's using your noggin.
Okay, I'm writing my fourth book, and I'm looking for good cop stories. I'm going to use that one. I'll flower it up a little bit. There's a fellow that runs this writers group that I belong to, and he said, Ken, you ought to write an anthology about all the cop stories. And I said, okay, that's a good idea. So I put out a letter to the retirees in the St. Louis County Police Department, and I said, I'm going to write another book, and it's going to be about cop stories. So send me your funny cop stories or your poignant stories or your good time stories or whatever. And so I got a whole batch of them. And I got to sort through them and start putting them in some kind of order here. So, but that should be a pretty good book. Yeah, I'm going to use that one. And there was a canine guy, and you know when somebody's getting ready to rabbit, you can tell. And this canine guy says, "Don't run, buddy, because I'll let the dog loose, and you're just going to go to jail tired."
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, you know,
I had one that happened to me personally. I never mentioned because it was embarrassing. My partner and I had pulled a young lady over. She had run two stop signs, not one but two. And we got her pulled over into a supermarket parking lot. And within the parking lot, there's another stop sign, too, so the cross traffic can go safely. But we get her stopped, and she opens the door, and she ends up getting out. But we get her back in the car, but her car door's still open. We write her citations, whatnot, go back up and talk to her. I mean, she was really nice about it. I mean, she wasn't one of these idiots. And I guess the way I was standing, on my right-hand side in the back, I had my ring for my baton, but it was standing out kind of sideways and it protruded. And I was standing near the door frame. So when she slammed the door shut, it got caught.
Uh-huh.
She started pulling away slowly. And, well, naturally, I ended up having to run alongside the car until she made it to the stop sign at another 50 feet. And
whoa.
She looked at me, and I'm running next to the car telling her to stop. And she's looking at me, and she rolls down the window, and she's getting, what did I do wrong now? I was like, nothing. You need to let me go. She had me captive. She would have, if she didn't even realize that she was dragging me.
Oh, she just wanted to capture you, and then.
Yeah, it's a good thing that she wasn't asked, because I was able to talk with her.
Do you?
I mean, she wasn't doing anything malicious. It was just, I guess fate, you know, I shouldn't have been standing in the direction that I was, and a piece of my belt got caught in there, and boom, I got nailed.
Those things happen, buddy.
But it was embarrassing as hell. I mean, here, you know, you got supermarket goers looking at you running alongside of a car you just pulled over. Your partner's running after you, and you're running alongside the car.
It happens. But,
hey, Ken.
Yes.
We're trying to get a whole radio show with you guys, like, telling your stories like this. You could maybe, like, read some of your stories on the air, or, you know, that you're, before you put in the book, or maybe even, like, start, like, tell part of a story and say, you know, if you want to, if you want to know the rest of it, you got to buy my book. You could do all kinds of fun stuff like that. But we do want to do an entire show on law enforcement officers calling in and giving their stories like that. And I think that would be a really good contribution.
Oh,
that,
man.
You giving some of your stories would be really cool.
Going, yeah. All cops have a story. We got about a couple minutes left.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, we're good. Go on ahead.
One time when I was riding with a guy, and we pull up, I said, hey, pull over here. I got to go cash a check. And it was a supermarket. And so I went in, cashed a check for 20 bucks or whatever, have some dinner. And I come out, and I said, okay, let's go. And my partner says, no, wait a minute here. This guy just pulled up here in the fire lane and was by it blocked a crosswalk. And he runs in the store and runs back out, and we go over and we're talking to him, and he says, give me your license. What for? He says, because I'm going to write you a ticket for parking in a fire zone and blocking a crosswalk. And the guy says, oh, why don't you go catch a burglar? And this copper goes, oh, my God, I'm so confused. I don't know what to do. You know, and the guy that was the violator's, you know, kind of jerking back. He went, wow, what's this guy going nuts over something? And this guy makes a big, this uniform copper, and I'm going, well, what the hell's wrong with this guy? And he goes, I'm so confused. He takes his hat off, and, you know, that's when you had to wear your hat every time you got out of the car. And he hits his forehead. I just don't know what to do. My God. And he says to the guy that's going to get this parking ticket, he says, yesterday I caught a burglar, and he told me to go write a parking ticket. I just don't know what to do. So a little courtesy chuckle would be appreciated.
I'm muted. Okay. I am sitting here laughing. I'm sorry, but that one was really good.
There's so
many
of them.
We had a guy one time we were chasing, and we chased him into a building. But the thing is, I love it when a door doesn't open the way they think it's going to open, and we watched our suspect just bounce right off of a fire door because it didn't open. I mean, it was hilarious. I mean, you couldn't have asked for anything better. And after we caught him, he says, Jesus Christ, he says, I felt like I just got hit with a hammer. I was like, yeah, you probably did. We laughed the entire time. I mean, just to watch him smack off that door, it was like watching a rubber ball.
God looks after coppers, and he's the only one. But you got to admit, David, you know, police work is humorous.
Oh, we've had a lot of good laughs, sometimes at the expense of the public, but, you know, it was a good laugh nonetheless. I mean, it helped us get us through us our day. I mean, as much bullshit as we see, just to have something hilarious happen, you know, and a positive spin for ourselves, I mean, we can just sit there and chuckle about it all day long.
Oh, yeah. And we see humor in things that other folks don't, but that's okay, because if it wasn't for humor, you know, we'd all be stark raving lunatics. And I only stayed on 13 years, and I had
that's a lifetime when you think about
well,
it.
Well, I went corporate chasing a buck, you know, and then later, you know, you sit in these butt numbing meetings listening to the bean counters talk money and before tax profit and all that shit, you know, and you're sitting back, you wonder, I wonder what Merck, my old partner in narcotics, is doing today, and I bet he's out running and gunning, and, oh, God, I never should have left, you know. I think we've
been in that position, you know, us that have, you know, have left the job, and we sit back and think of the things that we could be doing or what we could have done, you know, and we hear some of the stories from, you know, some of our fellow officers that we've been friends with for years, and you say, man, do I miss that.
You know, you miss the guys and the cases and the stuff like that, but, you know, you don't miss the baloney.
Oh, no,
and,
you don't.
The bullshit with it.
Yeah.
But you can live with that stuff as long as, because, boy, you know, what a family. There's guys that I was friends with on the police department that I'm good buddies today. And if you haven't seen them in 10 years and you see them and you just pick up your conversation right where you left off, just like it was yesterday. And what police officers are, by and large, good people. You know, there's some knuckleheads out there, sure. But listen, everybody, please be aware that the cops don't like those kind of people either. The good cops don't like those folks either. But every now and then somebody sneaks in. But great bunch of guys and gals, and I love every one of them. And, yeah, I miss it. But, you know, I tell you what, I'm still active in my retirees association. I saw this Lesma blog, and I got on that and got talking with David and Amanda. Next thing I know, I'm sitting here talking with you. And we're talking about old cop stories, and, you know, I'm sitting here with a big smile on my face, and it's great to
it's heartwarming
great to talk cop stuff. So
it's heartwarming. I've been away from the job now for a while, and I miss it. I mean, do I miss the rainy nights and jumping over fences and running through dark backyards? Not really. But, you know, the thrill of the chase, the thrill of doing things, and the positive things that we did, too. I mean, just that made you feel good. I miss all that.
Well, one thing that what Blacklist and Chicago PD don't show, what police work is, writing reports.
Oh, God, the paper pushing that's involved, they really don't realize how much paperwork you do. You push more paper in one day than the White House does in a year.
Yeah, amen. I see we're about to run out of time, right, Amanda?
We've only got a couple minutes.
Okay, I'll give you a short one. One night, and taking a burglary report or some damn thing, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I pull up in this apartment complex parking lot, and I was facing the road, and you turn on your you got that overhead in the front, and then you turn on the spotlight, and then I hang a piece of paper over the visor, and the light bounces off of the hood, and off of it reflects off of this piece of paper, and you can have some light. I'm sitting there writing this report, and I get a call, and they said, "Are you at such location?" I said, "Yeah," and they said, "Do you have your spotlight on?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, somebody called and complained about it." I said, "Oh, for Christ's sake." So I shut it off. I went someplace else. You know, it's stupid stuff. But entertaining, I hope.
Oh, I'll tell you what.
I love hearing these stories. I'm actually getting a nice little kick out of them. It's fun. I love this. I could sit and listen to law enforcement stories all the time. I love it, you guys.
Well, see, like even back in the day when I was doing reports, you know, and then being a shift sergeant too, I mean, I was responsible for going through all the reports that have been turned in end of shift, and I'd have to proofread every single thing. And let me tell you what, some of the verbiage that was used, and, you know, it was just...
No, you can't use that.
I was amazed. I was like, oh, my God. At the end of the night, my shift would end at midnight, and I never got out of the station until at least 2 o'clock in the morning. By the time I got done reading everything, and after they had roll call for the night shift, in going over the evening's events, you know, they'd get a brief synopsis out of all the reports, but when it actually came to posting it all, because everything for us was done on paper, it wasn't done on computers like they do now.
Yep.
Spell check and all that other stuff. And it's like, oh, some reports I had to hand back, say, hey, rewrite this, This is going to become a part
hand
of...
back reports, yeah.
Well, what's new, George?
That was the part of the job that, you know, sometimes it was funny, but, I mean, it's a tedious part of the job, and people don't realize what you have to go through.
Yeah, that's for sure. And God help those guys out in Frisco and Seattle. My God. I don't know where that's going. I don't know if there's any humor in that stuff. I'm sure if you got some old Seattle and San Francisco cops, they got plenty of funny stories. But
it's
humorous, but
the old timers are the ones probably with the most humorous stories. It's the guys that are doing the job now. I've got to tip my hat to them because they're faced with a beast that's a formidable foe. I'll tell you.
That's for sure. That is for sure. Okay, I guess we're down to the wire here.
I guess we're just about out of time here. Amanda, is that correct? We're done? We're out of time?
Amanda, come in.
I guess she...
Control to Major Tom. Come in. Hello?
I guess she's done her thing.
Okay, I guess we're done here. Well, listen, David, look me up on Facebook, will you? It's just Ken Dye.
Sure.
And let me know those two things. I'll do some research on that, and we can discuss it, say, maybe like next Friday or so.
Yeah, that would be great. I think that's a good topic, and, you know, the influence that Hollywood has on our communities at large.
Okay. And I will challenge you to come up with three good stories, and I'll do the same.
We'll do. Sounds good.
Okay, buddy. We'll talk to everybody next week. Good show. Enjoyed it all. Everybody take care. Wear your vest, wear your seatbelts, huh?
Take care.
Bye-bye.
God.